You don't really mistake a B-52 song for anything else. The sheer energy and glee of their music. Fred Schneider's bark-like singing voice. And the harmony sung by two women with perfect 1960s bouffant hairdos, Cindy Wilson and Kate Pearson. Pearson, the redhead, has also sung on records with artists like Iggy Pop and R.E.M. But only now, after four decades of music making, has she put out her first solo record. It's called Guitars and Microphones, and she is here with her band to perform some songs for us and talk. Kate Pearson, welcome to Studio 360.
Hi, Kurt. Glad to be here.
Happy to have you here. So you have been performing with the B-52s for going on 40 years.
Not quite 40 years.
But
don't add time.
The anniversary's come up. I know.
It's moving fast enough.
What made you decide, time for a Kate Pearson record?
Oh, I just want to work more.
Yeah?
No. The band is actually, B-52s are taking a break. So this opened up this window of opportunity, and it's also been something I've wanted to do all my life.
Really?
I tried to do it maybe 12 years ago. I got together a whole set of songs and performed them and did a little tour. I did a whole record in Japan with a band called Nina.
Uh-huh.
We toured in Japan. And
so this is a long slog to get here.
It's been a long slog, and it's finally coming out, and I'm really thrilled
to
be doing this.
Well, I'm happy you have, because it's a really good record.
Thank you.
Will you play a song from it to begin?
Yes, we will.
And you'll play?
Bottoms Up.
Excellent.
Magic lies, hypnotized, silk-pinned eyes, and oral fixations, letters home, while you roam, clutch the past, chase the sedation.
Was Kate Pearson of the B-52s performing Bottoms Up from her own new album Guitars and Microphones. So, Kate, can you introduce this band?
Oh, yes. We just kind of met not too long ago, and we were doing a benefit called Ladies of the Valley up in Woodstock, which is we're all from the Hudson Valley.
Uh-huh.
Well, we all live in the Hudson Valley. And So this Smokin' Young Band, like, they're so great. And Monica and I, my partner Monica and I, we've been practicing guitar all winter, trying to play these songs, thinking, oh, we're going to play these, you know, maybe we have to play them ourselves, just, you know, Monica and me, and get a drummer. And then we realized the folly of that.
Yes.
And we decided, wow, we need these guys to play with us. So do you guys want to shout out your own names, or do you want to?
My name is Connor Kennedy on the guitar.
Brandon Morrison on the bass.
Will Bryant on the keys.
I'm Lee Falco on the drums.
So these, as you say, is this hot new young band. You not the people you've been playing with for almost 40 years. Must be entirely different, sort of getting to know each other musically and otherwise.
You know, it's weird. We were hanging out at our studio up in Woodstock, and we were in the kitchen and just talking between, you know, rehearsals. And I found out that, you know, they're mostly like 20. And I didn't feel any kind of age gap. And I thought, am I, you know, it's weird to feel like I'm maybe a 20-year-old boy at heart or something. But It's a refreshing. It's almost like when we started with the B-52s. It's like, whoa, this is like really fun doing new songs. And
You collaborated on writing the songs with the Australian singer and producer Sia.
Oh, yeah.
Who also produced the record, right?
She's executive producer.
Executive producer.
Tim Anderson produced the record.
And she has written songs for people like Beyonce and
Rihanna.
And Rihanna. Every famous single-named female singer in America today. How did you two start working together?
Well, none of this would have happened if it hadn't been for my partner, Monica, who really got this whole thing going.
Really?
I've always wanted to do the solo album. And as I said, I tried, you know, and wrote all these songs. And she mentioned to Sia, who was our friend for a while, and she said, can you help Kate get this started? And she said, yes, I can. And
Monica is your partner in every
sense. In everything, yes.
Yeah.
And but anyway, she mentioned to Sia, can you help Kate? And she said, yes.
Had you ever done that before, been in this process of songwriting in that fashion?
Well, the B-52s write collaboratively. Uh-huh. We write almost every song together, which is very unusual. I don't know of any other band that does it so collectively.
Yeah.
And, you know, we jam and jam and jam for hours.
So you were kind of, it was a familiar
process. Exactly. Yeah, collaboration is a thing I do.
Yeah. When the B-52s emerged in my youth in the late 70s, you pretty much single-handedly invented a kind of new subgenre, at least, of new wave. I want to play a track off the second B-52 album. This is a song called Private Idaho. I remember 1980 very clearly, and this was such a new thing, this retro, kitschy thing. Today, all music is so drenched in the old and in nostalgia, right. We sometimes don't even realize it's that. Talk about how you came up with the sort of conceptual idea of B-52's music and the sound and what influenced you.
Well, it wasn't a concept. I mean, we never sat down to conceptualize together.
Yeah. I'll have big hair and she'll... No, no.
I mean, Keith Strickland thought of the name, the B-52s, which was our nickname for a big bullet-shaped kind of nose cone, bomb-shaped hairdo.
Uh-huh.
That was still very much in vogue in Athens, Georgia at that time. And we used to crash parties together and kind of hang out. And then one day we had a Flaming Volcano drink at Hunan's Chinese restaurant, and we went to jam at our friend's house, and we wrote this crazy song called Killer Bees, which we never did record. But, you know, we decided to wear wigs, and I had really long hair, and we went to Laverne, this hairdresser, who teased our hair up, and we wore fake pocketbooks on our head for our first performance, fake fun fur. I mean, they were fun fur pocketbooks.
And were you already kind of dressing and looking that way, or was this just all out of your heads, we're going to do this?
It was just for fun. It was just like kind of what we did, an extension of what we did for parties, like just wear crazy clothes.
Uh-huh.
And we were influenced by 60s Vogue magazine when Diana Vreeland was the editor, Fellini, you know, just kind of crazy stuff.
And musically?
Musically, we had such eclectic taste. We listened. There was a great music library at the University of Georgia.
Uh-huh.
So we listened to African music and Prez Prado and A lot of dance music and surf music and everything, you know, influenced us.
It seems like...
I Ima mean, Sumac, Yoko Ono, sorry.
There were other new wave bands at the time being quirky and ironic in different ways. I'm thinking, speaking of art school, for instance, of Talking Heads. But you guys were more about, it seems to me, fun than some of the other arty new wave bands.
Yeah, I mean, I think Talking Heads had such a sense of humor, too, and so did Devo, too,
yeah.
and Blondie. There was also kind of a lightness, you know, and sense of humor to those first kind of wave of punk kind of things. And we happened to land in that new wave genre, and we were like, what is new wave? You know, they just made up that term.
It's
you know?
The postmodern of music.
Exactly.
And do you think the fact that you were from the South – had a big shaping influence on your music?
Well, Fred and I are both from New Jersey.
That's not a New Jersey accent, I hear.
No, I don't know. I never really had a...
But living in the South even, no?
Yes, there's something about Athens. I moved down there to just do a back to the land thing, and I lived in this funky little shack without, you know, any hot water, without any water.
As a hippie?
Yes, I was a hippie. I was a back-to-the-land, kind of doing a back-to-the-land thing when we all got together. But I think the influence of Athens, there was not the scene there then, not a creative scene.
Even with the university, even with the art school?
The art school for sure. But there wasn't really a music thing happening.
So you were it.
We started sort of, you know, I mean, obviously George's got incredible musicians, but there wasn't this kind of new kind of band thing happening in Athens.
R.E.M. hadn't been broken yet.
Not yet, no.
So three of the four of you were gay. Fred Schneider, flamboyantly so, as your front man. Did you think of yourself, even though this wasn't a phrase in 1976, as a queer band?
No, we didn't think of ourselves as queer band. We just thought of ourselves as just plain queer.
In the sense of eccentric?
Eccentric, yes. I mean, we were all had our own kind of wacky, you know, I hate to use that term, but, you know, it's always applied to the B-52s. But we all had our sensibility. We had a very similar sensibility, but we all brought our own kind of craziness to it, you know. And, you know, it was just like a five-headed monster when we got together. It just gelled. There's something, you know, just about all of us coming together that created this sort of genie in a bottle blend that just, when it exploded, it was just unique. And it was really unique from any other band,
I think.
So
what looked fun, you were actually having fun?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. That's good to know. I hate to be disappointed.
No, we said, you know, as long as this is fun, we'll still do it. And we're still doing it.
And by the time Love Shack became a big hit in 1989, the mainstream audiences who embraced that, a lot of them probably had no awareness of the kind of cultural origins that you had mixed up, right? I mean, campy, bohemian, 60s retro. they probably just, you know, took it on, and this fringe thing became a mainstream thing.
Yeah, it was like that was almost a new beginning. I mean, after Ricky died, we didn't feel like we could continue, and so we took a time off. And then we started feeling like, wow, life is so precious and we really ought to come back together again and also honor Ricky's memory by coming together. I mean, it sort of conjured his presence again and Cosmic Thing became this kind of a lot of songs about Athens. And so, you know, I think it was like you could see when we played people that reacted to the new songs, you know, all of a sudden it was like, oh, yeah, Love Shack.
Yeah. And as I was looking back and thinking, you had just turned 40. That must have felt really good. Like, hey, I'm 40, but look, we've got this gigantic pop hit.
Yeah. Oh, the whole thing was just a roller coaster because we started out just doing this just to get as a healing process to do Cosmic Thing. It's like, let's get back together. And just write, and we consciously said, we don't care if this gets played on the radio. We don't care if it's a hit. We're just going to do it. And all these great songs just poured out, you know. And so we started touring again, and we started playing clubs, and then it started getting really, you know, hot. And then we started playing bigger places, and then we went around the country, round and round for like a year and a half we toured.
Yeah. Second act, maybe even bigger than the first act.
Yes.
And so as a kid in New Jersey— When did you start singing and how?
I started singing when I was born. Oh, no, I really always wanted to be a singer. That's all I wanted to do. And my father was a guitar player in a big band for a while when he was younger. And then when he got married, he always continued to play guitar at home. So I used to sit on his knee and strum the guitar. And I had a folk protest band in high school called the Sun Donuts. We wrote all our own protest songs.
In like the early 60s at the protest, folk protest
yes,
moment?
Yeah.
Yeah,
sort
wow.
of mid-60s. And
and when, as in the 60s, you decide, I'm going to go to Georgia. Was that part of the romantic idea that I'm going to be among this old rootsy Americana music?
Not really. It was sort of the hand of fate that brought me to Athens.
Uh-huh.
I traveled through Europe after college. I went to BU, Boston University. And then I decided, well, I have to get out of America because it was Kent State. And I just thought, I have to leave this place. And so I went to Europe. And I traveled around for about 2 years. And I met my future ex-husband, Brian Kilcain.
Uh-huh.
And he worked on a fishing boat. And we decided, anyway, a long story short, we wound up going back to America, and we met some people who were driving to Georgia, to Athens. So we said, okay, let's go to Athens.
You really are like a poster girl for baby boomers.
Really?
You had every step of the way you
yeah.
touched. Kate Pearson, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And before you go, will you play us out with a song?
Yes, we will.
What will this be?
This will be Bring Your Arms.